On this episode of Football 301, Charles McDonald joins me, Mr. Forverts, to continue our free agency preview. We look at the defense, go position by position. We look at the top names. We look at pairings that we like. We do buyer beware. We look at under the radar guys that we think maybe outperform their contracts or get a bigger contract than you would expect. We also start the show with some league news. Trent McDuffie traded to the Rams. We react and go over all that. Drew Dolman retiring. We do a quick news roundup because the NFL does not stop and we don't stop at Football 301. Great show with Chuck. See you guys in a sec. Hello, and welcome back to Football 301. I am your host, Nate Tice. We are continuing our free agency preview as news trickles in with the NFL, but we're going to look at the defense. We're going to go position by position, look at some of the guys that are going to get paid next week and the weeks after that, because free agency seems to go on until July. But we're going to talk about some of the under-radar signings as well that we want you to keep an eye on, that a guy might get paid a little bit more or might get outperform that contract that they get over the next couple of weeks. But to help me do that, we did offense on Tuesday with Matt. Today, we're doing the other side of the ball, special teams. Kidding. We're doing defense. And to help me do that, after a journey underground in New York, is my guy, Mr. Forverts, Charles McDonald. Great to see you. You survived the weather. You survived the subway trip. And now you and I get to pod again. Good to see you, bud.
This city's trying to kill me, bro. Yeah, between the snow last week, like every flight that I was looking at, it slowly got canceled and canceled and canceled. And then like the last one I was looking at for the combine, it was like $1,000 to get there. I'm like, I'm going to be in big trouble if I book this. And Al's like, you know what? Just stay home. Stay home. And then today, you know, it usually takes like 25 minutes to get to the office. But I left my house at 1 and I walked in at 2:20. We're stuck underneath the bridge between Manhattan and Brooklyn for a while. So I'm fine for my life. But going to a wedding this weekend, going to get out of here. Yeah. Going to get some sun. Going to go to Mexico for a couple days. It's going to be pretty good.
Man. You travel to every wedding. Like these are some, like you, none of the weddings you go to are just like down the road or like upstate or like Baltimore. No. It's like, no, we're going out of the country. We're going to beaches.
We're either going to the beach or we're in the boonies. Like where it's never easy to get to. Like it can never be, oh, we're like right by a metropolis. I can hop on the train and Uber over. No, it's got to be, we're in the middle of nowhere where there's no airport, there's no train station, or we got to fly like real far. So I think I'm just going to get married in my backyard probably when that happens.
That's nice. Well,
just going to give up.
My wife, who's from Vegas, when we were first, you know, or broke and we're trying to figure out where to get married at, and she's like, oh, I'd like to do this in California. And you know, and credit to her, she knows me, but like our wedding party or like people invited to our wedding, I'd say 80% was my group and my family. And I was like, well, everyone's coming from all over the country, so we kind of got to get to a spot that's easy to fly to. And was like, well, or we can limit numbers by going to a certain spot. And then she was like, I'm not getting married in Vegas. I'm not getting married in Vegas. And then we got married in Vegas because that was the easiest place for everyone to fly to. Found a great spot. You had never known it was in Vegas, you know, a little like converted art warehouse. But it was kind of one of those things where it was like, that was her idea too. And I was like, I don't know, man, that's a pain.
I get it. Because when I think of getting married in Vegas, I think of like the Hangover scene where you're like chapels. In those rent, the rent chapels. Yeah, whatever. Yeah. It's not a good look, but it's a real city. I promise you. It's not just the strip.
There's more to it. Go downtown. Go, you know, not even just Fremont. Get off of Fremont and right around there, the Arts District. It's cool. There's some good spots here in the suburbs where I live in Summerlin. It's got some good stuff. So, yeah. But no, you know, this has got some good stuff. The NFL. I'll give myself a C- on that transition, but we're going to talk about the Trent McDuffie traded to the LA Rams this morning. There was smoke about this. I thought I was Mr. Smarty Pants and going like, hey, that Rams second first round pick might be live, not realizing others have kind of circled that as a very live pick that might be traded. And the Rams have gone back to, I would say, total F them picks, but quasi F them picks. And in this draft class, I totally understand it. But Trent McDuffie traded to the Rams for this year's first rounder, pick 29, I believe, off the top of my head. Their fifth rounder, their sixth rounder, and next year, the 2027 draft, a third rounder for Trent McDuffie, an all-pro corner who has slot versatility, has outside versatility. But when you saw this, Chuck, we'll start with the Rams. What did you think about the Rams acquiring McDuffie and this price tag for him as well? The Chiefs is going to be a longer conversation. I have an inkling, so I want to. We'll get to them in a second.
Yeah, I mean, I like this for the Rams. I think you don't really need to take too long to explain this. Just look at their cornerback room from last year. It wasn't good. They needed just straight up starter bodies, like not even like necessarily stars, but just to get like quality guys back in that room. So this is a good first step. Getting McDuffie, it's a big win. I laughed pretty hard when this came across. I was like, Les, like he couldn't help himself. He got to go back to who he is at all times. You know, like there was no way he was going to keep just drafting players in the first and trying to figure this out. So I got a good chuckle out of seeing him ship off another one because you could tell, like, especially with the way Sean talked after that game, like the NFC title game, he's immediately kind of shady towards the Seahawks. He was obviously upset, like, oh, they're itching to get back bad. So I would imagine this is about to be like a full-on assault offseason for the Rams to try and win another chip before Stafford gets out of there.
That's how I viewed it. It's like, I get them pushing here, but also it's a guy in his mid-20s. It hasn't really missed time. He's just been a good player. Even outside of just a Spags' scheme, actually scheme talk too. He actually fits what the Rams do under Chris Shula, like great. But even if Chris Shula moved on, they ran a different defense. McDuffie kind of has a skill set that works in a lot of defenses. He can play, like I said, he can play outside. They play dime, so he can bump into the slot along with Lake, who played in the slot for them as well. I really like this. I think the aggressive defense that the Rams play, or the funkiness that they play with, fits McDuffie. He's playing a defense like that uses his eyes, that can trap some stuff, you know, palms coverages, as they would call it. But he can use his eyes on that. That's the same stuff that Rams do as well. So scheme fit, timeline fit, impact player. They, like, credit to the Rams, and we're going to talk about maybe a couple of those Rams defenders that are free agents. They got the most out of these guys, but Emmanuel Forbes is Emmanuel Forbes. You know, like, and you have said it, and it was more of a college football line, but it applies to the NFL. Blue chips. Once you get to the playoffs, scheme goes a long way, but blue chips matter as well. Players over plays. And that time, you would feel that sometimes come up with Forbes or even come up with Durant, who I do like.
Yeah.
But McDuffie is just a little bit better than that, along with having versatility. He's a good blitzer, so fits as their blitz stuff. He's good in zone. He can do some man stuff if they need it. I really like McDuffie. I think he is the top of what I would call a tier two corner. Tier one being PS2, Stingley, maybe Sauce. I'm sure I'm forgetting a guy right now. Everyone's Quinion Mitchell, I would consider tier one. I would say McDuffie is that high end tier two guy, but I mean, all pro caliber player for a reason. And I don't know. I love this for the Rams. If I'm being honest, I think they're pushing it. Like you said, I think this year, and then like, this is their window trying to maximize Stafford's last year. And McDuffie is a nice way to not only do that, but then build for the next step of this Rams team and having an impact player on the back end, who again is a scheme fit. So really like this for the Rams. Now the Chiefs. Chiefs are an odd spot, my friend. Pick nine, they can do a whole bunch, but then they acquire another first rounder in a draft that isn't the deepest and isn't maybe full of high-end talent. Is a lot of what I call green chips, and maybe that's okay with them because they're just trying to find starters. They have a lot of holes on both sides of the ball. I think they have to add to their offensive skill position groups, add speed, add size. But also on defense, they need guys. They need guys that can win one-on-one. They need guys. But what'd you think about them and what they're doing right now and kind of with the position that the Chiefs are in? Like, I'm is this a regroup year in your eyes? Is this going to just bet on ourselves again? What do you think?
It's so tough when your quarterback is that good, you know? It's like every year.
Right.
Like even like last year, it was kind of an anomaly in the sense that the year before was where the offense was actually good last year, but they just lost all the coin flips that they won the year before. But I guess that what they've decided is just to restart entirely on the defensive back end, because you have not only is McDuffie's gone, Brian Cook to safety, he's a free agent. Cornerback Jalen Watson's a free agent. Leo Chenal's a free agent. Yep. So I don't even know if that's like a regrouping. That's a detonate button on I guess what they thought some of their issues were. So we'll see how this works. But man, like you said, I'm not really thrilled about the idea of adding like a first round pick in this draft, unless there's someone that they see they like at the bottom of the first. But I guess I'm just a little bit confused about what their plan is from here, because, man, like, look at that depth chart right now. And I know still haven't got the free agency yet, still haven't done the draft yet. Now they have 2 first-round picks. But look at the back end of that defense. And even, like, some of the stuff up front, it's gotten thin, man. So I don't know. It seems like now they have a crater of needs to kind of fill in the next couple of months, which, as we know, as people who don't root for the Kansas City Chiefs and, you know, zoom out a little bit, that's really hard to do. Like, you're telling me you need linebackers, defensive backs, and defensive line in one offseason, and every single year that Mahomes is healthy. And based on the reports, like, there was no other structural damage to his knee besides the ACL. So he's probably going to play week one, because we've seen guys push that and it's kind of become the new standard. So if he's on the field, you have Super Bowl expectations. This is not Super Bowl talent level defense anymore.
No. That's the thing. It's like, this is like a reset move, but also I want to see them follow through on it. I don't know. It feels like they're trying to do two things at once. Right. Honestly, I just did a show with our friend Barnwell, Bill Barnwell, and we were talking about this trade, and it kind of came up. It was like, well, why would they do that? Well, they're betting on themselves that, you know, Spags can find it. You just mentioned a couple of those names, like Jalen Watson. He was a 7th-round find. You know, they hit on a lot of day 3 and day 2 DBs, and maybe they're saying, oh, we can find another guy just like that. Well, Spags is getting up there in years, along with Andy Reid. So, like, if you're just building around Spags' talent identification and coaching, well, that might be only a 1-year, 2-year system still to go. You know, like, that's not a long-term plan to me. And I think coaches have. Andy Reid is very involved with personnel. And that is just not, that's anecdotal. That's what I heard. Everything, every instance, he has a lot on who they draft, a lot of input on who they draft. But then he's kind of bringing back Bieniemy. You know, I don't know. They're trying to do, I don't know what they're trying to do. Like, are you full resetting? Are you embrace? Yeah, I know, because that to me it was like, oh, we're bringing back the band. They get the band back together. Mm-hmm. One last hurrah with Kelce and Chris Jones, and this is. But then they're doing this move, which is like a step back move. It's like, okay, which one are you guys actually going to follow through with? So we'll find out. You know, this isn't the only move they make. Like, they might do something. Like, right now they have picks 9. Which I think they should go offensive skill position in some way, shape, or form, whether that's Sadiq, whether that's Love, whether that's a receiver. Then they have pick 29, then they have pick 40. Do they package 29 and 40? Like, you know, they can do more things with this. This isn't the only move. Are they clearing space to make some free agent stuff? You know, they just moved on from Juwan Taylor, which honestly, I could see was writing was on the wall last year when they signed Moore, Jalen Moore in free agency. I could see that kind of happening. It's weird because, like you said, when you have Mahomes, you feel like you compete. And honestly, when you have this offensive line that, if you want to be real bullish on it, and I am bullish, that they could be a top 5 locked in offensive line next year, you know, depending Simmons' health and everything. But I don't know, that they have 4 good starters, I think. And then they got Moore, who actually, I think, played okay when he's out there. And so, like, to me, that's like, oh, that's a recipe for success. But then you look at their defense with so many holes. You look at their skill position guys, they're smaller and slower than ever. It's I don't know. They kind of seem more like a 9-8 team right now, even if things break right. So I'm curious how they kind of fill out the rest of the offseason. Maybe in a week or two, I'm like, oh, okay, that's the vision. Or maybe after the draft, I'm like, oh, okay, I see what you guys did here. But right now, I'm just very curious move, because you have a guy in his prime, an all-pro, seems like a good guy, scheme fit, versatile. So even if the defensive coordinator moves away, and you don't have a lot of blue chips on this team right now, you don't have a lot of impact, true impact players, especially on this defense. So curious move that it's just one I'm just kind of squinting at. Like, I can see some of the arguments for it, but I'm just curious what they actually end up doing and following through with. It's kind of the next moves will indicate that more. So I like this for the Rams. Kind of have more questions about the Chiefs, even if I can make some arguments with it. And moving on to other news, Drew Dahlman, center for the Bears, unexpectedly retired at 27. Former Falcon, signed a nice payday, or got a nice payday from the Bears last year, solidified their center spot for like what feels like the first time since Olin Krutz was there. That's been a who's who of who's that playing center there. Although if I were a Bears fan, I'd be a little annoyed by how Coleman Shelton played. Because he plays for the Bears, he's a travesty, and he goes right back to the Rams, and he's like a fine starter. It's like kind of annoying. This has been a weak spot for the Bears for years and years and years and years. Dolman comes in, a great scheme fit for how much zone they run, a great fit to tell about Caleb Williams and kind of some of the pre-snap stuff as well, although I think Caleb was actually pretty sound in that stuff. I do think that this is interesting. Dolman retiring at 27. I'm not going to judge a guy. They know their bodies. They know their lives. You can retire whenever you want. He owes us nothing, owes Bears nothing. This is just how it works. He can control his life. But it just now leaves the Bears, who have that, you know, opening at left tackle. Joe Tooney's getting a little bit up there in age. And yes, Joe Tooney's been an epitome of health, but he is getting up there in age. And then at right guard, you got the best year out of Jonah Jackson you've had in years and the healthiest year you've got out of him in years. And now the two most important positions on your offensive line have openings at center and left tackle. Now, Tyler Biadasz, who was recently cut by the Commanders, surprisingly, I might add, it was in the building in Howes Hall yesterday taking a visit, so they obviously weren't totally blindsided probably by Dolman. So, and actually, I think that would be a fine signing for the Bears if they wanted a guy just to be a stopgap, get us through average starter, as opposed to just the travesties of before. But when you saw this, Dolman retiring, what'd you think about this, Chuck? It could be Dolman, Bears, anything that came to mind.
Like, whoa, okay. What's next here?
Right? 27. Yeah, yeah.
That's
not 30.
Because, last year when we were talking about them signing him, I mean, we were both on the same page. Not a big loss for the Falcons because Neusel was fine. Yeah. But it could be a big game for the Bears just from like a competency standpoint, you know, like, oh, well, we have a starting caliber center. That's not every team can say that. And it seems like it's getting harder to find like teams that have like, you know, quality, like conglomerate of offensive linemen. So I think like this is a pretty big blow. Right now, at least it happened like before the offseason really started getting going. I'm sure they knew it for a while, or knew that he was pondered for a while. So they might not be like totally caught off guard, but man, that's a big loss, like in the middle of that Bears offense. And it seemed like his presence like kind of helped stabilize things for them up front, along with the other additions that they made. So, now it kind of goes back into like wishy, like, you know, a little bit, maybe uncertain territories with the Bears offensive line, because Dolman's out, got some guys in the interior that are older. You got some guys at left tackle that you'd like to see, continue to develop and play a little bit better. So, you know, it's not like we're sounding the alarms, but it's like, that's a little bit more unstable than it was yesterday. And man, like the Stanford guys, they just get out of here. We got Drew Dolman, David DeCastro retired at 30, Andrew Luck retired at 30. Just get on up out of here. But I can't say it's a bad idea given, you know, we see what these guys look like when they're 40 and they're 50. So not necessarily a bad idea to DeCastro funny. Get out, but was a little surprised.
It's funny because I talked to a lot of my old Wisconsin buddies. Chris Borland was another guy that retired early. I talked to a lot of them, and a lot of them ended up going, like, yeah, I ended up hanging with a lot of like Stanford guys. And I'm like, I kind of crack up at that because now I'm friends with Sam Schwartzstein. And I was just like, of course, yes, we get along. But Travis Frederick was another guy that retired early. He got paid by the Cowboys and he retired in 2019. So I think he was 28. When he retired. And it's funny because Travis said something when we were playing together in college about that. Like, he was like, I'm going to get that second contract. When it runs out, I'm out of here. And I was like, oh, ha, ha, ha. And then he was like, no, he's not full of He's like, that's literally what he did. I love Travis. I one day want to get him on the show, but I have no idea how he feels about football because he's so smart. He's just such a funny guy and cool guy to talk to. But one day, but with the Bears, like Biadasz would be a nice little kind of like, okay, we're kind of a reset. I agree with you. Like even last year when it kind of like all the stars were aligning that they're going to sign Dolman, it was one of those things where I was like, all right, he's fine, above average starter, but like this is going to be an overpay, but you're just going from the crap to not crap tier. And that's like, that can be such a boost. You don't have to go from crap to all pro. Like you can just go to average and it could just feel like such a tier bump. And I thought that was the perfect example of that. And Biadasz would be the same to me. I think Dolman's is slightly better, but Biadasz is fine. Like I think he can handle the offense. He can do power game, gap scheme. They can go zone decently. He's had experience handling the offense as far as protection stuff. So I didn't think he would be a bad kind of like middle class signing. And then saw some rumors that they were maybe in the Linderbaum market. That's rich. I don't know how they could do it cap wise, but these teams find ways to do funny money stuff. So I would say that I'd rather them go Biash and figure out other spots than maybe chase Linderbaum. Linderbaum's almost like a plus Dahlman. Like they're very similar stylistically as zone centers. They're pretty smart. So, but like Linderbaum's kind of the premium version of that. I actually would want to see him with McGovern from the Bills, but again, he might be getting $18 million and that might be a little too rich, but who knows? Again, they might have some funny money stuff and invest in this. I think Ben Johnson knows where he knows where his breadwinners are at. And that's the offensive line. There's a reason they invested so much into it last season. And I think that's not going to change this season. So they're going to have a plan. And I'm kind of curious what it ends up being. But kind of a whole unexpected hole for them as I was kind of really starting to get very optimistic about what the Bears could be next season. But still optimistic. But have to see how this kind of ends up. Some last little news roundup. Jonathan Greenard from the Vikings on the trading block. As the Vikings kind of just go through this, like, where can we find money? Because they're in cap hell with a rookie quarterback contract. And they're just a weird team overall. And just want to see how they stick this landing and how aggressive they can get. But he's another pretty good pass rusher, I would say. I would even say a good pass rusher. They have Dallas Turner behind him. So maybe they want to get more reps to Turner. Turner really came on last year, finally. So maybe that's a reason. That's why they had Turner. But it seems like a good player to maybe just kind of snap, you know, cut ties with or move on from. But any thoughts on the Greenard and the Vikings right now?
It's funny because I had a thought a couple of days ago about Greenard when I was looking at the Vikings cap table. I was like, I did not realize he was making this much money. You know,
I didn't either.
You know, got a pretty big contract. If you looked at the Vikings cap table, things were in dire straits. You know, it seemed like the kind of spot where they were definitely going to have to shed some pieces to get, you know, not only cap compliant, but also have room to like make moves and continue to upgrade the team. So, you know, I'm not surprised that, you know, I guess that they're here because, I mean, this whole time while he's been on the defense, like our analysis has been, man, they need some blue chips. So, yeah. I don't really think that this is such a big deal. Like his impact will be lost, but I still view him as a player, you know, where Brian Flores could probably figure out another way to replace that production. Like, that's not the piece to me that's really going to, you know, kill this defense. They just got to keep adding, like, find some way to get, like, some real dudes just to make life a little bit easier for them as the season goes on. Because, I mean, shoot, like, they were courted well enough last season at the end of the year when they played the Lions. They won a game where they had, like, what, less than 20 passing yards, I think, from Max Crosby.
So top four defense by the end of the year last year. Yeah. No, yeah, there's a late defense.
You probably have one of the few defensive coordinators where you're like, we can figure this out in another direction and just move on because you need to get cap compliant. And you might need to sign a quarterback here pretty soon now that the Cardinals are going to just release Kyler Murray, just straight up cut him. And they're so irrelevant. We're not talking about how unbelievably incompetent that is to cut a, you know, above average quarterback before he's 30? Like, what? You're cutting him? He's not even 30 yet.
They're just cutting him. But that's it.
120 years of irrelevance for Arizona, and that's going to continue.
And every NFL owner loves it. All the other 31 owners love having that Bidwell vote whenever they need it. That's the reason why they're just like, yeah, do whatever you guys want down there. That's fun. I know the Kyler stuff, I'm like, I even talked about yesterday with Matt or Tuesday with Matt. I was just like, oh, yeah, man, like Kyler with – I just didn't think at first it would work because of they had the trade and the money wouldn't work out. And I was like, well, if he's just going to sign, like they can kind of talk him into taking a cheaper deal and yada, yada, yada. And I actually think KOC and Kyler are actually a great fit because of just how he likes to launch the ball and what those play action concepts use. Like, and I think KOC would find out ways to kind of use him in more creative ways, like put him on and stuff. So – it's one fit I actually really like. I wouldn't like him for like the Jets. I almost think he's too good for them to tank. Like, and I also see that Jacoby Brissett news getting trickled out. That was a landing spot for the Jets that I could see with Frank Reich there. Like, so I don't know. Kyler with the Vikings would be super interesting to me. I've kind of just keep coming back to that. I think I see rumors out there. I think he's on the short list. But now that he can maybe sign, definitely more alive there. Also, the Greenard thing, trading him. His base is 18.3 mil, basically 18.4 mil. Like that's what the new team takes on. So it's like the team that is trading for him is going to really want him, or the Vikings aren't going to get as much because that's going to hit their contract, their cap space so much as well. So it's, yeah, they're in a, they could do, they might do like 40 moves. They're going to be so active this offseason trying to like just get this all right. So it's going to be something crazy. And then we have the last thing was the Colts used a transition tag on Daniel Jones. First time a quarterback has been given a transition tag since 1996. Okay. I ranted about this with Matt, where I was just like, the Colts, man, like they are close to making some crippling decisions and they're really playing with fire here and betting on some outliers and betting on someone that just popped their Achilles. And just talking about Kyler has been more consistent and a better quarterback than Daniel Jones has been. Even yeah. with that stretch last year, Kyler has had stretches like that multiple times in his career. And with less conducive surroundings, I might add. And Kyler with Drew Petzing in a traditional offense was playing like a top 12 quarterback. That should make you exciting. It's not just the cliff years where it was all spread and hurry up and stuff. Like when they had to run a real offense, he actually looked good. He had his career high in QBR in 2024. Last year, all kind of fell apart because the O-line fell apart. Yeah. But man, Daniel Jones, transition tag, it's a lot of money. Almost $40 million. They're trying to figure out Alec Pierce, but they're betting on some. I always make the Disco Stew joke. They're betting on the Disco Stew graph right now. That everything, hey, that we were on the upturn right here. And we're just going to keep going up. But man, no first rounder next year. I don't know. What'd you think about the Colts transition tag, Daniel Jones, the whole situation?
I mean, this is ridiculous. Like, obviously ridiculous. I mean, what if you're a Colts fan, you see one day, Daniel Jones transition tag. The next day, Cardinals to release mm-hmm. Kyler Murray. What are you thinking right now? What just happened here? I don't understand how or why they felt the need to place the transition tag on Daniel Jones, because like, what's your competition here to sign him?
That's it.
And like, if you get into a bidding war for Daniel Jones, like you got to freeze, right? You got to freeze and stop and say, what are we doing getting into a bidding war for Daniel Jones in the first place? And the main point, like I have with Kyler is, man, like people are really, really down on this guy when outside of last season, his baseline production is like top 12 quarterback that can put on like months of sustained elite play. Uh-huh. So like, if you're going to sit here and say like, since Kyler Murray has joined the NFL, he's been a top 10 quarterback, I wouldn't really argue with that. That's a defensible stance for someone to have. That guy's he's about to be on the market and you don't have to give a pick to get him. And if he's petty enough to the Cardinals, you might be able to sign him for the league minimum. So they have to eat all the money. This kind of reminds me of where, like, we were talking about Dak Prescott this time last year, where he had the rough season the year before, got hurt, and people were talking about him like he had never played well before. When in fact, that down year for Dak, that's the outlier.
Best year.
Like outliers, yes. Like because I think people forget that outliers go in both directions, right? It's not just good outlier, so we're gonna base back down. Like if you have a bad outlier season, like Dak did the year before, or like Matt Ryan did in 2015, and you come back the next year, and you can still play well. So the idea that you would just cut this guy, and people have already forgotten, like what this looks like when he's healthy and he's playing his best and the ecosystem works, you can dump points on people's heads. And it just blows my mind like how low the opinion is on Kyler right now, because quite frankly, like the idea that you're going to walk into the NFC West with no quarterback as a new head coach? No, bro. Like, what are you going to do? Just get fired in 2 years? Probably.
Get that Texas film on.
The worst place for them is like they win like 4 games this year,
Yep.
And you're like, oh God. Now the division's up. We don't got the quarterback still. This is such a risky move. And I guess I just really feel like in a division that's as competitive as Arizona's is, why are you giving up on a quarterback? And if you're the Colts, why would you not be a little more patient to see what shakes out? Like the Colts So the Colts, like, the question I have for the Colts, did you make this decision knowing that Kyler Murray was going to be released? Because if you did, I got no defense of that. That just makes no sense. No sense at all.
And this is the thing, is like the league, and I know you and I, other people that I respect, how they watch quarterbacks, we kind of are all in the same lockstep on how Kyler. Am I going, oh, top 8, top 10? No. But am I saying that next tier? He's in that next tier to me, what I would call a tier 3 guy. And these are guys that everyone just goes, yeah, you got to pay him. You got to pay Baker. But, you know, and I would say maybe, I don't want to bring up other names, but like, yeah, like Baker would be like an example. Like Kyler has had more good play than Baker, you know? And in his career. And that, what you're saying with the outliers is, what are you betting on? This is the thing with Daniel Jones. Am I betting on the guy that always gets hurt? He literally has always gets hurt and has had a lot of more stretches of average or middling play, I'll call it, as opposed to maybe 2 months of really good play last year. Don't get me wrong. It was really good play last year. Started tapering off at the end because he got hurt, and then he got really hurt with the Achilles. He was already hurt before he got hurt. And that's Daniel Jones. And this is with him scrambling the fewest times of his career, taking the fewest hits, taking the fewest sacks, and he still got hurt. What am I going to bet on? The thing that I see the most, and that is what I see the most with Daniel Jones. Not to say he can't be an above-average quarterback in that ecosystem, whatever. But I don't know. With Kyler, under Cliff, under that wonky offense, he was successful and productive. He was an MVP candidate in 2021 for 2 months. And they tailed off. They did the cliff. The cliff fell off the cliff. But I'd see with the Petsing 2024 year, especially the first like 3 months of the season, that is what I kind of point to is like there's more real and real offenses or more NFL offenses. And I know his stock, like, he's not going to be the guy that the coaches are like, oh my God, this guy's amazing. They tell stories about he's in there at 4 a.m. and all that stuff. But I can watch how he plays on the field and he can win you a freaking football game. And I think that's the guys you pay. I've seen numerous, and Kyler's not this, I've seen numerous guys that everyone hated in the locker room, and they were fine paying them because they won games. And for some reason, Kyler gets the stigma. I'm just even looking the last 3 years, which I don't think anyone has called like, oh, Kyler's been playing like crazy. You know, he got hurt in 23, came back second half in 23, and then it goes 24. And then last year, I say 2025, he didn't play very well. Still, those 3 years. 14th in EPA per play among all quarterbacks over that time period. That's exactly what I'm saying right there. He's the 14th-ish best quarterback. Success rate, 15th. But in that range, Daniel Jones, 21st in EPA per play, and that's including his incredible first half of this year. So I don't know. We're on the same page here where I'm like, I'm shocked Kyler is so underrated. I know why, and I get it. He's not exactly what teams want to coach at quarterback, but he wins you games, he makes big plays. And for a stopgap type guy, why aren't you taking a bet on that? As opposed to another, not even just Daniel Jones, but another Heineke iteration that you want to draft or something of that sort. So I don't know. Kyler's stock is very curious to me. And that's why I want to see him with the Vikings, because he stopped kind of throwing the ball deep. And some of that was the offense. And I want to see him back in an offense that lets him push the ball, because that is what his gift is creating big plays with his legs and launching stuff down the field. So getting him in an offense that lets him do that, I think Vikings would do that. Maybe some other teams aren't coming to mind for me, but that's what comes to mind for me. But yeah, thanks for talking Daniel Jones into Kyler bullishness. Let's get into the free agents though, Charles.
Falcons just signed Kyler Murray.
Or Falcons signed Kyler Murray? I mean, that he's a great fit for, I mean, Petsing, Stefanski run similar stuff, but like, I think how he would be used, God, London with him would be great. That'd be fun.
They got a winner. Penix and Easton Stick are the only quarterbacks on the roster. Come on now.
I like Kyler, but I'm way better than Penix. Way better. Yeah. And Kyler can play under center. And Kyler, like, I don't know. Yeah. I know. That's a good one, too. Like, I wouldn't, like, the Dolphins, I'd rather them just kick the can and go to next year. Like, just what, that's your year this year. Trade for Davis Mills, whatever you want to do. Like, I know, like, Malik Willis, speaking of the Dolphins, is also, like, rumored for the Cardinals. And I'm like, why would you go for the mystery box? They've such, like, Malik is a great runner. He's incredible. I don't know. That's just so curious, because maybe your brother coached him. I don't know. But no, we, before we get into the free agents, we are going to take our first break, because that news items, those news items were pretty fun to talk about, but we'll take our first break right now and come back with linebackers, defensive tackles, edges. Oh my. See you guys in a sec. We are back. come out with a, we're going to go defense free agents, defensive free agents. We're going to hit a few of the guys that are going to get some top dollars, or depending on the position, medium dollars, maybe relative top dollars. And then we'll end with some under the radar guys. We're going to start with a linebacker. Some of the interesting names out there. We got Devin Lloyd, DeMario Davis, Quincy Williams, Caden Ellis, Alex Anzalone, Leo Chanel, Quay Walker, potentially Tremaine Edmonds, who, yeah, I don't think you could say Tremaine Edmonds without his year, how old he is. So it's like, however old he is, he's still now, 27. He's still 19. Yeah, he's still 19. Yeah. He's still 21. He still can't drink yet. Bobby Okereke just got released by the Giants. Any of these guys, Chuck, that you kind of focus on, you think maybe there's a match, you know, like a team that really makes a lot of sense for them, somebody you think is underrated, overrated, buyer beware, any of that sort with this group of linebackers?
Man, I hate to sound like a hater, but I would give my buyer beware probably to Devin Lloyd. Because you have the early season barrage of interceptions, and it's just not fun to say in the moment.
Hey, is that Derek Brooks?
Yeah, you know, right. You know, like, okay, especially like when it's like someone else causes, you know, pressure or a pass deflect, you kind of just happen to be in the right place at the right time. It's not fun to say in the middle of all that's going on, this guy's, you know, it's not that good, but you know, you kind of got into a spot where if you were there and the ball was coming your way, you have to be standing there. Maybe you could have caught it. Not to like denigrate like what he did last year, because it was a lot of fun, but he was like the test case of why turnovers are volatile and why you can't like count on them week to week to week. Because as the season went on and stopped, you know, you kind of just realized, oh, okay, well, just you know, another. Starting
put it this way, linebacker. We started giving more praise to the defensive coordinator as the season went along.
Exactly. So you know that's a survivable loss, but you know his age, production, you know his background as like a highly talented college player. We all know that these things still weigh in negotiations. So I imagine that he gets a pretty penny this offseason. I would just be a little wary of that because. I'm just not sure that the production from him was like something that was going to be consistently repeatable. And I'm interested to see how Jacksonville decides to kind of mitigate that loss or where they move on from here, because I'm not sure that like him leaving is such a devastating blow that they can't recover from. You can find other ways to make up that production. You can find other ways to get a little bit lucky, and maybe you just push it towards like secondary, offensive line, pass rush, because you got bigger needs than trying to pay Devin Lloyd and keep him around. So I think they'll be able to survive that. And I would be a little cautious of the team that just drops him a blank checkbook and says, what do you want?
Yeah, he's a little, I agree with you. He's buyer beware for me too. Not to say he's bad. It's just that his production might have been more scheme oriented, and also has been the guy that's kind of struggled with consistency and just kind of reading the game out, getting lined up in the right spot. I thought this year was his best instance of that. I think Foye Oluokun really does a lot of help with him and kind of get him, you know, aim straight and everything. And I also think the defensive coordinator, Anthony Campanella, is really good with linebackers. And I think he helped him out and it kind of got him going like, hey, hit this hole. Hey, blitz here. Hey, drop here. And kind of just cleaned up his game. He has talent. He has traits. He's young. Those things are going to get paid, especially for teams that are desperate at linebacker, which a lot of teams are. But also what's working against him, not only him, this group, is that this is probably the deepest linebacker class I've ever scouted, period. And I would say, so I started joined the Falcons in 2014. And I would say I've become really aware of the draft as far as like how I scouted since 2012. This has easily been the best linebacker class I've seen. And so not just top end, but depth and flavors. So that's kind of working against these guys a little bit as well. It's like, why not just spend a third rounder, a round two guy, as opposed to paying a premium on this. And then we pay the premium on guard or tight end or something of that sort. So yeah, I think Lloyd can do a lot of things, but he's going to need, the optimistic signing, if you do pay for him, I would say that you need a steadying force next to him. Like the guy with the green dot, that's calling the plays, kind of helping him get it lined up. Not just like, he's not like a total dumbass. Like, oh, you can't go anywhere. But I'm just saying that's what, to use his gifts and to use his ability, he kind of needs that steadying force next to him, where we kind of get him to let him impact plays like he did in the first couple months of this season. So I'm a little bit there with you there. I think the rest of this kind of class is kind of like specific guys. Like, I like Quincy Williams, but it's like he only plays well with his brother.
So right. I was going to say, he needs someone next to him.
He has to go to Dallas. Yeah, in front of him. Just go with his brother and go to Dallas, and everybody's happy there. I've always liked him. He's got a great, you know, like celebration after he has big hits. He can be a little wild horse and all over the place, but I like him. So if you want like a cheapy kind of guy.
I said, like, when that trade happened, like, you should have just picked up Quincy, too. Like, because if Quincy's interesting because he's like an auxiliary piece. He's like the best auxiliary piece that you could have. If you've got a bunch of other pieces, if you got defensive linemen, you got a couple safeties or a cornerback, and you just kind of throw this pit bull out there in the middle of the field, like, that plays. So I think it still would make sense for Dallas to grab him because probably not going to be that expensive. You know that if Quinn's there, he's going to be locked in because that's exactly what happened when he went from the Jags to the Jets. And all of a sudden, Quincy's, you know, balling, doing stuff they wasn't doing in Jacksonville. Wonder why that was. Think maybe his brother's presence there kind of got him to dial in a little
bit.
Probably
helps.
But, yeah, it probably helps a little bit. But if you can get him on the roster in Dallas, cheap 1-year deal starters, you get a little bit bigger, you get more physical, which they definitely need. And it still gives you like the flexibility to go grab, you know, some corners and safety. So I think that still makes sense. And like, if you have the defensive lineman, it's fun to just watch him run around there and just hit people at 100 miles an hour. Not always doing the whole much else, but there are a few players I would want to be hit at in full speed than Quincy Williams because he doesn't care if he gets hurt, you know? So he's someone that can be a little firecracker just for your defense.
Yeah, he has the play style of a wrestler, like a professional wrestler, WWE, AEW wrestler. I think he's a guy. He's a perfect guy if a team's trying to, like the Cowboys, so I want to rebuild their linebacker room and they double dip. So they sign him and then draft a guy, or they sign two guys. Like, he's the second part of that kind of pairing. I think that's the way to bring him on. You know, he's going to be 30. That's another knock. And, you know, he's not the biggest linebacker and he's so feisty. But the thing is, like, when he's out there, he impacts games. So, I don't know. I think for a cheapie, because he probably only get a 1-year deal somewhere. But, like, a team like the Cowboys that's desperate, if they want to double dip, like, he's that kind of perfect little piece for that. The other guy, though, like, Alex Anzalone actually improved, I thought, over his time with the Lions. When he first got there, I was like, oh, God, he was botching all the time. And now I actually thought he became, like, a good starter. I want to get him offline. Stop posting so much and stop calling out the Lions social media team for not including your highlights. I think that would go a long way with how he stacks up in my brain. Don't worry about that, Alex.
You're good, bro.
The teams are going to pay you off the film. Don't worry about the social media team not posting a PBU you had or something like that. But again, this is a guy that a team that's desperate, you can get a solid starter here, a guy that really helped shore up some stuff in Detroit. And then the other guy I really want to bring out is Leo Chanel. Quay Walker and Devin Lloyd, same conversation, same, like, literally a lot of the stuff I just said about Devin Lloyd, same stuff with Quay Walker, needs that kind of steadying force next to him, but he's got ability. But Leo Chanel is one of those, I don't like him for everybody, but specific defenses I really like him for. I think the Buffalo Bills should be all over him because of his experience with Jim Leonard's defense, and he's also just a great scheme fit for that. So that is one pairing I really like, is Bills signing Leo Chanel. I really like Chanel, but again, it just has to be, there's only certain defenses I like him for. I think that's how teams are going to view him anyways, because he's just such a, he's a unique player. Like, the Vikings could really use him. Like, he's a perfect Belichick type of linebacker. Like, the Vikings could really use him because that's Brian Flores, but also, like, I always thought that the Bills with Jim Leonard, they could really use him too. Anyone that blitzes kind of guys, linebackers off the ball. I already brought him up. That was your under the radar guy. Sorry to blow your load. I don't want to say that. Sorry to ruin your point there. Any thoughts? Yeah. Whoa.
Yeah, February ended a week ago, Nate.
Leo late. Chanel. Charles is your under the radar guy. Sorry to stomp all over your piece there. Anything to add on about Chanel? Sorry about that.
not about Chanel. I think you covered it. Like Chanel, I guess he's at like a point about the, like, he's kind of at a certain point that the guy I'm about to talk about has already been through, Caden Ellis. Cause I think maybe you could expand Leo's game to do stuff that Caden Ellis has done. And I was skeptical when they signed him to that deal, but he's been a pretty good damn player for the Falcons over the last few years. You know, not like one of those elite linebackers, even though we only have like one right now and he broke his leg. So we gotta get back on that college football. Gotta fix that. But like Caden Ellis, the way he just kind of was baseline good at just about everything he needed to be, plus like an actual plus blitzer, that ended up being pretty valuable for them, even as like the linebacker spot next to him was just a rotating door of guys who were like constantly injured or undersized. So I think that's going to hurt the Falcons defense if he goes somewhere else. And that could be a pretty big pickup for a team that like really likes to get aggressive and ask him to play a little bit more downhill, because he still got gotten coverage, but man, everything else is pretty strong for him. So that's going to be a miss for the Falcons if they can't get him back. And the last guy that, you know, kind of had me interested was N'Kobe Dean, just because, man, like when he's been on the field, like he's gotten a lot better over the last few years. But again, like when he's been on the field, which is kind of tough to predict sometimes because he's been so undersized. But I wouldn't like blame someone for taking, hey, let's see if we can get him to stay healthy for 1 year. Because man, when he's good, like that's a pretty like special player to have on your defense.
Yeah, Christian Parker, the Cowboys' new defense coordinator, is kind of already like, I could see him hinting that maybe bringing Dean in or something of that sort. So like, but yeah, no, like when he, like you said, he's kind of that new linebacker archetype, which is like some Fangio stuff to it, but it's like they blitz the A gap a lot. Ellis is that example too. I'm glad he brought up Ellis, because that's a great under the radar guy. So yeah, my under the radar guy, I already brought up one, Quincy Williams, Eric Wilson, same exact thing. All our conversations that we just had.
I almost put him as my list.
These guys, like, so Chanel, Eric Wilson, Caden Ellis, all these guys are kind of the same archetype, where it's just like they're blitzers. Their coverage is kind of limited, but they're not bad, but they have to be used in certain ways in coverage. They kind of like, if you have a creative front seven and a creative defense coordinator, they're great. If you're playing like a basic 4-3 and just static coverages, don't like them so much. So these type of guys, like Eric Wilson, I wanted to bring him up as well.
For one game a year is good for putting on like a prime Ray Lewis impersonation. For one game a year, he'll have one game where he just totally blacks out and the rest of it's like fine. But free agency at 31, I mean, only getting a 1 year deal, might be able to plug him in for a starter, because he actually has put up some enough capable play where maybe you could ignore that spot for you if you have him.
They made sure that he was out there last year, so for a reason. We also pulled up the best picture possible of him right now. Look at the, that looks fake. Those arms, how they look right now. All right, moving on. Oh, man, I'm sorry, lifting again. I am so sore. We're going on to defensive tackle. Actually, probably one of my more favorite positions to talk about. And I have to appreciate Stone, knowing what the product is, knowing what the show's all about. The first guy he dropped in there, Roy Lopez, who would have been my under the radar guy, but we got to start with Football 301 favorite Roy Lopez. Someone pay this guy. The Lions had highly paid guys, a D tackle. They drafted a guy early, and then Roy Lopez outplayed all of them. And again, that's how he was with the Cardinals, and that's how he is now with the Lions. Only getting these 1 year deals. Man, someone give Roy Lopez a 2 year deal, pop, please. This is a great two gapping, space eating D tackle. He's awesome. But other guys at the top of the list, Falcons, David Onyemata. He's a little older now. John Franklin Myers, I think, is a good, good player against the pass and the run. Calais Campbell, who's going to turn 40. Logan Hall, it's kind of just been an average starter, I would say. Javon Hargrave was a cap casualty for the Vikings. Christian Wilkins is in a weird situation. I have no idea what's going on with him. But any defensive tackles on this list or any that you can think of that you wanted to break up?
I think it's going to be – I don't know if we're going to get an NFL reaction to, like, how – at least like a contractual reaction to like how the game has changed a little bit, because I was looking at PFR, Pro Football Reference, their EPA data last year, and the vast majority of the NFL, for the first time in a long time. The vast majority of the NFL put up positive EPA numbers according to their model.
Yeah.
In terms of rushing. So 21 teams last year had positive EPA numbers according to PFR last year. I wonder if we start seeing like these guys like Roy Lopez and John Hankins, who just kind of get one year deal, if they start to get, obviously Hankins is on his way out, but like guys like Roy Lopez, maybe they get a little bit more money because teams are, they're back to trying to cram it down defenses' throats. And it was a lot more efficient than it was last year. It was a lot more efficient last year than it has been over like the past decade of football. So guys like Roy Lopez, my underrated guy was Kyrus Tonga from the Patriots. Loved him for watching play for a really long time and keep watching him play. Like, man, like, why is nobody trying to pick up these guys and give them like, you know, a little 2-year deal? You don't have to think about nose tackle, because it's always funny that these guys get so undervalued, because when you don't have one, you always find yourself in a spot where you wish that you had one. Where you're like, damn it, like, why don't we have someone who can just punch the center in the mouth,
eat it,
plug up the A gap, and we can do something else? Yes. Like, why is that not seen as a valuable trait? I mean, because
I get it. I don't get it.
I think we'll see it like rotate, because we had like the whole, oh, running backs don't matter, don't run the ball, blah, 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 blah. And now we're back in the spot where running the ball is something that you should definitely be doing. So the defense adjusted that. Do the contracts readjust to, well, shoot, like, if you're going to run the ball, do we need to get our Chris Jenkins and our Casey Hamptons back out here to kind of slow everything down? You should at least have someone who you think can do that on your roster, because we've seen, shoot, like the Bills 2 years ago, they didn't have someone. They had the best defense in the league 2 years ago, and they got run out of the damn stadium by Buffalo.
Yep.
Because they didn't have one guy who could just sit in there.
Seen the Cowboys in the playoffs a couple times.
Right, Cowboys in the playoffs, right. And then we've seen, like Jonathan Hankins come in, like, on the Seahawks a couple years ago. Just sit there and eat the gaps, and it frees up so much. I find it interesting that has like become to be viewed as a devalued skill set, where it's like, okay, you're a first and second down player. Well, we really need to be good on first and second down. Those are the most important downs.
Yeah.
Third down.
Do you do your third down blitzes? So, you better win first and second down.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I would love to see guys like Roy Lopez and Tonga get like some multi-year deals, because those skill sets are just crucial as we enter like this next era of football.
Yes. You don't have to break the bank. You don't have to draft them high. You just have to address it. Like, you can't just wave it away and go, oh, we'll have a seventh rounder do it. It's like, I think it's more like you have to have a plan for it. And I think the league got so like, well, you have to rush a passer. Well, you have to rush a passer, which is true. But that skill set has now become, the floor has risen for how good a pass rushers everybody is. So it's like now this skill set where it's like middling pass rusher, but can at least eat 20 to 25 snaps a game. That is significant. And like, I mean, I think there's so much focus, and I get it, the two high defenses, everyone just kind of focuses on the back end. You know, like, what are most people focusing on with Seattle? Okay, it's Man of War, and I get that. It's easy to talk about it. But how you can play too high is that you can win with four up front. And it's not just rushing the passer. It's that you can hold up against the run, playing in these light boxes and letting – you're buying time for the safeties to fill the run. But if you are not winning your gap, you're not winning your assignment, then the run is on the safety at 7, 9, 10 yards. If you are winning those assignments, then the run's on the safety at 4 yards, if it does break through. Like, those add up. It might not be every snap, but if that happens 5, 6 times a game, those are a lot of yards that start adding up. And the name of the game is explosives. And you have to start, we think back end, but it has to start up front to get explosives and to limit explosives. And I think the best example of our guy, this is a former Football 301 favorite that I wouldn't shut up about for years, and he finally got freaking paid. And I understand why maybe teams were a little wary of paying him, because I see how he plays on the field. Tyrae Tart.
Yeah.
Years and years and years. Late round, or I think he undrafted for the Titans. Okay. And he was going to come up for a contract, but it was like 1 year deal. Then he gets signed by the Titans for a 1 year deal for a $4 million deal. Then he gets signed by the Dolphins for a 1 year deal, $1.2 million. Then he gets signed by the Chargers for a 1 year deal, $1.1 million. Then he gets signed again by the Chargers on a 1 year deal because they made him prove it for $4.5 million. And then finally, he gets paid for 3 years, $30 million. wouldn't you want to be a step ahead and go, hey, we're going to give you finally go 1 year, 1 year, 1 year, and now we're over. I'm going to say overpay $10 million. That's about fair. But like the going rate of these guys is so cheap. It's like, wouldn't you want to get out ahead and maybe pay him 3 years, $5 million a pop, and now you just saved yourself some money. That's how I view these guys. But Tyrer Tart's maybe the best example of a guy that just kept kind of not sticking. And then it's like, oh, you're so important to our defense. Jesse Minter plays a lot of too high, or he did. Now he's in Baltimore, but you need these guys that can impact the run and hold up against the run. But yeah, Tonga is a great example. Yeah, we see some breaking news. You see that? You want to say it?
I was about to say, well, it was about news. Related. I was going to say, we got a wide receiver 4 is making more money than starting defensive tackles nowadays. And that leads into Stephon Diggs getting cut by the Patriots.
Tutu Atwell got a 1 year, $10 million deal. And he played like 100 snaps last year. And no one bats an eye. But also, it's like a nose tackle that plays 30 important snaps a game. It's like, $6 million? What? I know. I can find receivers. I don't know. I can't find these space haters. But we have breaking news. Speaking of receivers, Patriots are releasing Stephon Diggs once the league year starts, which is very, very soon. Stephon, past 30, you know, there's the receivers. He came in, he did his part, kind of tapered off, I would say, in the back half of last year as kind of things went along. The Patriots need to address their offense, need to add juice to their receiver room, need to add their offensive line. They can do a lot there. But we think about this, Diggs, no longer a Patriots, what it means for both of them.
Eesh. I mean, I thought maybe we'll try to keep him for one more year just to stabilize the room for a little bit as you transition to the next era. But I guess not. I'm not sure how much money this saves him. I know his cap hit was about $25 million next year. I can't imagine that they're in any tight cap space just based on how much money they had last year. And like the biggest splash they made was, I mean, it's still only one player, Milton Williams. Like if you're looking at like just raw dollar spent. No, they have the 10th most cap space, so shoot, maybe they were just tired of him, which I guess could be understandable too, even following his personal life, which is unavoidable.
Yeah.
And I think that could be a problem too. He ain't good enough for all that no more, you know?
Yep. That's all pro behavior. I'll put it that way.
Not started. You got to be going 1,500 yards behavior, bro.
Diggs, you know, it became more of a, you had to cater to him on field too. Like he had to be used in certain ways. And he became a nice steady option, especially on third down, working from the slot. But that's the thing. They needed juice in that receiver room. And I think they want to go younger. And maybe they're just like, hey, enough with this. This juice isn't worth the squeeze. Like I can see that completely. Because they have cap space, but he is about to turn 33. And, you know, that's a ticking time bomb. He's already had an injury. And again, the game's kind of slowing down a little bit for him. And I'm like, if the headache's not worth it, all right, fine, we'll move on. That's kind of, I think, how they view it. Obviously, they're going to address receiver. I think DJ Moore is very live for them. AJ Brown, of course, is going to rumor because of Vrabel connections as well. I have no idea what their relationship is, by the way. So that's why I've never really touted that one. It's like, I have no idea how they feel of each other. I've never really figured that one out.
It seems like they're cool from what I've gathered.
I think they seem fine, right?
Yeah,
I know. And Brown. Yeah, none of them are, I've never really heard anything with the coaches like kind of like they've fought or anything. It's just that he's just a big personality, like most good receivers are. So like DJ Moore, AJ Brown, like I think they're a trade. I think they're a team that could double dip, maybe trade and then draft a guy. They're very live where they pick in the first round. They are in a perfect position to address O-line and or receiver, based on where I think these receivers will end up. I still want Denzel Boston to them for so badly, but they could add speed there. They drafted Kyle Williams last year. They worked him along. They use him very specifically on the outside, but he's got some juice. So maybe that's why they're saying, okay, we got Kyle on the outside. Maybe we draft one other guy, and then we got Pop Douglas in the slot. We can work with this for now. And Matt Collins is the dirty work guy. And Kayshon Boutte, who played very well, as our starting outside guy as well. Like that, I can live with that room. So maybe it's just funny that Diggs is the one squeezed out. If you said a year ago, it'd be like, oh, Booty's gone, or, you know, Matt Collins is gone. But they show that they had roles that were more efficient for them. Like they those roles made more sense for what they have and what they want to be. So I'm not actually totally shocked by this, if I'm being honest. Because I just did think, like, if they addressed it and they signed a guy, traded for a guy, or drafted the guy, I was like, all right, everyone's like going to look at other names. I'm like, I don't know. Diggs might be the one squeezed out because they want to make it more juice and more versatility in the receiver room as well. So totally get it. Get younger there. Well, we'll revert back to defense now. defensive free agents, and we'll look at the edges. Edge defenders. Trey Hendrickson was just, well, I would say just released, but they did not get tagged by the Bengals on what has been like a, feels like a 5-year process of negotiations between Hendrickson and the Bengals that ended just so ugly. It seems like that keeps happening to the Bengals. Weird. Now, just look at the Carson Palmer saga. Look at Corey Dillon back in the day. It's just, this is how it's been under the Browns ownership. But this interesting edge class, though, you got Adafa Owe, who really came along last year in the second half once he got traded to the Chargers. Khalil Mack, speaking of Chargers, still got some juice to him. Definitely is a plus run defender still. You can find some value there. Quiddy Pay, Jalen Phillips, who had a nice year when he got traded to the Eagles. Got some traits, but health has always been a thing for him. Joey Bosa, speaking of health. Also, Joey Bosa was extremely disappointing in the playoffs. And that's going to kind of linger, I think, in some people's minds. But I still think he could be a nice secondary pass rusher. Bradley Chubb, Jadeveon Clowney, who actually played fairly well. Any names, though, the edge class, any fits that you like, any buyer beware of this group of edges, Chuck?
I had a couple guys I liked. I'm not sure like where he's at or where people are on him right now, but Draymond Jones last year, I thought, had a really nice season after he got traded to the Ravens, or after he ended up with the Ravens. Like, honestly, I was like, man, I didn't know you could move like this. So I guess kind of he's one of those guys that kind of got miscast a little bit. And it seemed like last year he maybe found like the best spot for his like physicality, because he's like the ultimate tweener guy. Like 6'3", like 275, 280, fast, kind of strong, but like not strong enough for you want to play in defensive tackle. Maybe not quite fast enough for you want on the edge. And Baltimore, they just seem to get the most out of those guys for the past 20 years, it seems. And that was a really good run for him after he got there. So I'm interested to see, if he decides to go back, if Jesse Minter is his guy, if he's going to go, maybe follow Harbaugh to New York. I'm not sure, but that's a guy that I would really be interested in seeing where he goes next. And then just a little homer pick for a deep cut. I want Arnold Ebiketie is like, if you're maybe trying to find like a third or fourth guy. I thought he was coming along.
Dirty work guy. He's a dirty work guy. Like that's how I view him. Yeah.
And maybe not the player I thought he was going to be coming out of Penn State, because I thought he was maybe a low first rounder, but still like he's someone that can be a positive contributor for your defense. Like if you when you have especially like some bigger bodies on the inside, or you have guys on the edge that can kind of play the bulk of the snaps, he's a real good guy to kind of bring off the bench. I wonder if given the Falcons' current situation with James Pierce, if they try to bring him back at all. But sometimes you have these guys where they don't pan out to maybe what you thought they were going to be, but they still end up to be like useful quality players in the NFL. Mm-hmm. I think that's where Ebiketie is. So like if you have guys on the defensive line already, you need like a little jetpack or someone just come in and play like a reasonable level for small amount of snaps, I think that Ebiketie's a guy to target there.
Yeah, if you view him like a good 20-25 snap guy, I'm right there with you. I know. I'm glad you brought him up, because he became more impactful than when he first got there, and he kind of came along. So that's a great shout in there. I know some of the under the radar guys I actually am more excited about than maybe those names kind of even listed off. I think Owe would be an interesting stab for somebody. He has the first round selection. He has traits. He came along last year, so he might get paid a little more than maybe people are expecting. I think Mac and guys like Bosa are more kind of like rotational guys, high end role guys. I think they feel themselves the same way. So like the fun group for me is just the under the radar guys, because I like Joseph Asai from the Bengals. I think he has really come along in that defense that was a mess for the first half of last year, but then kind of became like below average as opposed to just a historical travesty like they were in the first half of the year. Right. I don't know. I think Osai's got something to him, and he's young. He's in his mid 20s, 25 or 26. If you get him like a 2-3 year deal, I think he like can play good snaps against the run, can play good snaps against the pass. Like he can be part of rotations, and scheme versatile maybe is a good way to put it, but I'm just thinking like he can play good snaps for you. He's not going to get paid to be an ace, maybe not even a high end two, but like a good two, good three. And maybe just more to him at his age and just how his play has really developed. I think he's a guy that I think a smart team goes after. Like there's just there's something here where you can get more out of him than I think he's gotten in the Bengals. And also one of these things, I already cracked jokes about the Bengals and everything, but like buy from teams or buy off teams that are like bad programs and bad franchises. You want to buy those free agents because you can go, you can argue narratively, we can get more out of them because that team was such a mess or that unit was such a mess, yada, yada, yada. His development has got stagnated because that team was such a mess. But like Asai is a good example of that. I'm glad he brought Draymond Jones. That was another one. But Alkaid Muhammad, who we've talked about several times from the Lions, super productive last year. And yes, he's nearing 30. And like, yeah, and you have to be, he's not going to be an ace. And I think more just like, yeah, some of the production might be a little juiced, but man, even if you get a 10% drop off out of that circumstance, out of those circumstances, like Muhammad to me is like, that's a guy I would go after as like a secondary guy. Again, I think DeMarcus Lawrence is better as like a down to down player or like, you know, cause he can impact the run as well. But like, I don't know, Muhammad, why would you give him a 2-year deal? This guy's been productive and like substantially so. So he's a guy that hasn't gotten a lot of hype that I think a smart team that wants to throw in that third guy to bring in their pass rush, you know, if they already have two awesome guys or be that number two, if you already have an ace, just like he was with Hutchinson. Muhammad's a guy that I kind of viewed and circled that like is getting underrated, I think, in these discussions. And then my last little like football 301 favorites, Dennis Gardick, but I think he'll go back to the Jags. He's just more of a fun niche player. But any closing thoughts on the edges? Or maybe a better question, any Max Crosby landing spots that you've marinated on? It seems like all the smoke is that he's gone, starting from when Jay Glazer did the show with Jason and Caroline to like what's coming. Mike Silver says, oh yeah, he's gone. Albert Breer's been like, oh yeah, he's gone. But what do you think about any Max Crosby landing spots?
Does the 13th pick get it done? McDuffie and Crosby to the Rams? I don't know.
I wouldn't hate that plan. They have the cap space, man. They can do it.
Right. It's a starting point. If you're the Raiders, like, shoot, 13th pick. Like, you get Mendoza, you go
pair up with someone else. Not in our conference.
Right. It's not a bad move. I think it makes a lot of sense. Like, to send him
like
either.
The 13th pick in, like, Byron Young. You know, like, one of the young, yeah, you know, a player to like add in his father, but yeah, but continue. Yeah. That's kind
or
of
if you still have them picks mode. How about two firsts then? I don't know.
Yeah,
13 and right. First next year. If you don't care anymore, let's turn it up. I think that's probably the cleanest fit I see to me in terms of like where can the Raiders send Crosby to a competitor that makes sense and they immediately get a return on that. Because, you know, like big criticism last year with Michael Parsons trade was, man, why did you do this after the draft? Like now it's going to be harder to find someone to help you. And Jerry said, how about I trade for Quinn Williams? Hey, you like that? And, gotcha. But obviously, like, the Raiders, they're not in that mode where you have, a guy who's been playing quarterback at a high level for 10 years and you're trying to win a Super Bowl. So not quite the same. But, I think, like, the Rams make sense. If Kansas City's feeling froggy, I wouldn't do it if I was them because I think you got bigger needs, but you know, that could be on the table for them. If he's trying to go somewhere where what's interesting about this year is if Max Crosby wants to go somewhere that is in Super Bowl contention, you actually have some options like close to the top of the draft where the Raiders can fulfill that request while also getting quality draft capital back that they can use immediately. Cause you're looking at Kansas City's at 9, Cincinnati, if Joe's feeling good. That's at 10. Dallas is at 12. The Rams are at 13. So Baltimore's at 14. So there's teams where he could go theoretically, and the Raiders can still, you know, have a top 15 pick they can use immediately. It's kind of lining up nice for him. But I still think it's funny how fast it went from I'm not playing anywhere else but the Raiders. They sit him for one game. One game. He said, get me the out of here, bro.
I think what's been pretty funny, I know, right? I think it's pretty funny too, is that like multiple people have said, it's like, oh yeah, Max Crosby, one of his, he's really close and really good friends with owner Mark Davis. And then you see other reports and it's going, you know, Max is frustrated with some of the stuff's going on, some of the team, you know, some of the team makeup, tired of having a new coach every year, tired of all that. I'm like, wow, you know who's in charge of those decisions, Max, is your friend. Like, so if you have frustrations, I think you got a direct line to him that you could talk to. No, I think a lot of teams make sense. Like the Eagles are always going to be alive. The Cowboys would be hilarious if he ends up there. I'd be like, hey, Jerry, nice shell game you did here to boost that defense. You know, there's a bunch of teams like I wouldn't throw you. They don't have a first, but like the Jags could get creative. Like, do you dangle Walker in like 2027 first and like go like, hey, you got a young guy they can build around, all that stuff like that. That's another team. Like, I think he'd be a fun match for anybody. So we are going to probably stew on that because it seems like every day there's a new Max Crosby item. So until that trade happens, I feel like we're going to just keep talking about it, keep theorizing on it. But we're going to take our last break and we'll come back with the defensive backs. See you guys in a sec. All right, we're back. Defensive backs. We can start corner. We can start safety. Let's look at corners first. Got like a couple names here, you know, but you know, if a corner's good enough, they're usually going to get paid or traded for a first rounder. You got Nashawn Wright, who had a fun year. I would call it fun because there was some, yes, there was production there and he had some really big highlight plays. He also got some bad plays, but I thought Wright had a nice year last year, of course, with the Bears, needed to. Jalen Watson would be the guy I would kind of dot as if I have to sign a free agent corner. He'd be the guy I would kind of go after. Got Jamel Dean, Alante Taylor, who had a nice comeback year last year for the Saints. I thought he was a travesty the year before, like was indifferent to tackling and also became very feisty last year. He's got some slot versatility. You got Reek Woll and Josh Job from the Seahawks. You know, kind of pick your flavor there. Both have had moments. And then Marshawn Lattimore got cut by the Commanders as they kind of do their offseason sabbatical. But any of these guys catch your attention or any under the radar guys you want to throw out here?
Yeah, Alante Taylor, that was probably the guy that's most interesting to me. Because he, like, when he got to the NFL, he looked like he was about to be a damn star. With how quickly he kind of got acquainted to the speed of the game. And then, you know, Marshawn Lattimore fell off and think maybe things got a little bit too big for him real quick. But last year he was back to looking like he was on the track that he was going to be on. Still a young guy. So that's someone that I think will be interesting to see how much he gets offered in free agency and where he ends up next. I'm not too obviously Tariq Woolen, I think he's pretty good. Josh Job had his moments like in the Super Bowl, has been a little up and down. But I was looking at SpotTrack and, you know, like I hadn't really considered the idea that Nashawn Wright could get like $20 million a year. I was like, man, like, really? Because I went through the whole season without too many people actually, like, you know, giving him too much hype. Because, you know, we know what the deal with the Bears defense was. They weren't great, but they got their hands on some plays and, you know, you have some big splash moments. But we know that's like the extreme, like, test case for buyer beware when it comes to defensive backs on the free agent market. You know, the guy who's going to get beat but still make the big plays because you still get beat, you know, like in big plays. Yeah. That's few and far between, or it can really oscillate from year to year or even game to game. So that's a tricky one for me. But I do like the idea of Alante Taylor kind of finding that next step in his career as he moves forward. So not too much on the corners though.
Yeah, Taylor's the guy. Yeah, like, yeah, Watson, Dean Taylor. That's kind of the guys. And the Seahawks duo is interesting, you know. And then some of the under the radar guys, I do like Kobe Durant for the right price and just the right scheme. Like, I think he could be a fine number two for somebody. Martin Emerson from the Browns, he's coming off an injury. And I think it's an Achilles. So, but before that Achilles, he was really ascending. He's still young. Monteric Brown from the Jags. I think he's a priority for them, but he's a guy that came in for injuries as well too, but he actually had some nice plays. I thought inside and outside. Roger McCreary, I've always liked. Titans traded him to the Rams last year, kind of their whole defensive backfield smatterings, but I've always liked him. And then my last little under the radar guy is James Pierre, who I know, but he played opposite at JPJ in Pittsburgh and actually was really good. I would say really good, but good. He's older, but he's a guy that maybe like can surprise some people, maybe get signed and be something, be like a stopgap starter for somebody. But he's just someone I just wanted to throw out there. Yeah, Alante Taylor might legitimately get like 15 mil a year, like, because he's got length. He's got good film from last year, and that's the film everyone's going to look at. And again, if you can play both sides, play inside and outside, that's only adding to your appeal. So I'm glad we got to talk about him a little bit, because I agree. After his rookie year, I think it was his rookie year, I was like, this guy looks like a future Pro Bowler. And yeah, he kind of just tapered off from since then. So nothing like a contract year to give you a boost. Now, safeties, we got Kobe Bryant. We got Brian Cook from the Chiefs. We got Cam Curl, who's a guy I kind of prefer of this group. Got Jaquan Brisker after he's now come back from concussions. Had some nice plays for the Bears. Reed Blankenship from the Eagles. And then anybody else that you want to maybe throw out here, Chuck. But any guys that stood out to you, or you find jumping under radar guys, or any parent or matches that you like, or buyer beware. Safety is such like a flavor thing.
I haven't decided if Gilman is a go for it or a buyer beware, but I
Ravens Gilman. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Chargers Gilman. No.
Right. So, you know, I think you might just want to, if Jesse Minter is still open to it, you might just want to stay Baltimore Gilman if you can. So that's gonna be an interesting one to me. Jaquan Brisker is like, I found it, I guess my take on Jaquan Brisker still, and I know it was 2 years ago, is like he missed like a whole season with a concussion, basically. And it wasn't like a thing people cared about. And then he came back and played, and now he's a free agent. Like, is that still a problem for him? I still need answers on what happened there. And I feel like that story just kind of went away. And like the fact that, you know, he's just going to continue, and obviously this is his personal choice. But like the idea he's going to continue, keep going, is like, man, like no one's a little concerned about like what this looks like for the long term. Like maybe the Bears are if they're letting him hit free agency, but you know, at his best, like he's one of the better safeties in the league. And like that defense still needs talents. Like the fact that they're letting him walk, I don't know. Like, yeah, obviously like last year wasn't the best year for anybody on that defense, I guess, except Nashawn Wright. But man, we've seen him play some really, really good football in this league. And I'm wondering like why it's gotten to this point where he's just going to hit free agency when they need help on defense, especially 2 years ago.
What do you know kind of thing? Yeah.
Yeah. What do you know here?
Yeah. Him.
Cause I was asking that last year when he came off whole season without playing due to a concussion, basically.
His original was going to be like, oh, missed 2 weeks. And then it was like, oh, missed a month. And then it was like, oh, might never play football again. Then he plays again. It's like, oh, there he is. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I liked him coming out of college, and then he's kind of been a little bit more wild horsey than I expected, but he's had impact plays. Kevin Byard, their other safety, is a free agent. I think CJ Gardner-Johnson, who they brought in, is also a free agent. So, yeah, they have to figure all that out on top of center, on top of some other defensive tackles, especially. Brisker's interesting to me. Blankenship's interesting to me. I thought he was always like a solid starter. I think Cam Curl is the guy I would maybe look at the most, because I think he can really solidify a defense for people that really need that kind of back end presence. Yeah, the other radar guys, I like Nick Cross. I think he can be the same kind of thing, kind of solidifying for you on the back end, a smart guy. Kyle Duggar is a unique player. Certain defenses I would like him for, like the Vikings, bring him in for cheap. I would really like that. But like he's kind of really tapered off for me because you have to use him a specific way. So yeah, safeties are just such a, and it's a pretty good safety class too, as well, draft class and corners. So that kind of can change the math for everybody, where they just kind of, these guys, none of these guys I really predict getting paid or 1-2 cheap deals, kind of like solid starter deals, because I think that's what this group is. We're closing it out today, Chuck. That's the free agency previews wrapped up, and we'll be back next week to react to the free agency, the first couple days, the first wave after tampering period starts. We'll be back on Tuesday to do that, to react to all that. I'm Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice. That is Charles McDonald. You can find me at 4Verts on Blue Sky. You can check out all of our Yahoo stuff. We got big boards coming up that we're grinding through, but we got those coming out on Yahoo. So make sure to check out me and Chuck's work there. Subscribe to us, follow us, rate us 5 stars, wherever you get your podcast. Pretty please leave comments, reviews, all that good stuff. We'd really appreciate it. Watch us on YouTube, on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel as well. Make sure to like and subscribe. Not only this show, this episode, but everything you see on there, we'd really appreciate it over here at Yahoo and over here at Football 301. But thank you to everyone behind the scenes for making us look and sound good. They do such a great job. Thank you all for listening. Have a great weekend. See you guys next week for some free agency madness.
Be nice to your neighbors.